these guys? Layla actually laughed at that, and some spark of the light-hearted girl I loved came to the fore again, now that the worst of this was over.
Fair enough, Griffey.
She flashed a grin at the few encased Drakes still awake.
We'll have fun while you're gone, I'm sure.
I was about to raise a finger of warning to her just in case, but she rolled her eyes.
Light pranking at most, I swear.
Fair play, Bethel, I said with a chuckle as I turned to fetch some actual honest authorities. I'll see you soon.
Don't be too quick,
Layla laughed as she sat in the chair I had picked up and crossed her legs.
You Drakes thought you'd have some fun by snatching me. In now, you'll get to see just how much fun I can be.
They didn't think it was funny, but I sure did, as I laughed the whole way out of the mill. Chapter 12. Once I had returned with the Academy forces, it was a small matter to take the Drakes into custody, and since we were military personnel, they were taken to a military court. Better still, once the locals in the slums learned about what happened and who had the Drakes in custody, they decided to testify and, well, long story short, they all went away for a long time. That said, after all the reports and testimonies Layla and I had to prepare, I was almost happy when the weekend ended and we got back to our daily duties at school. Tuesday was supposed to be a response squad training day, but Arwen had started preparing for exams, and both Varleth and Orin had exams for their upper-level classes, so that left Nia and me to our regular training with the rest of the class, which I didn't mind at all. Practically everyone had improved in every facet of personal combat. Rifles, bows, swords, hand-to-hand. Most of the class had found their own niches, masters of a specific skill, but we were all proficient in each. I was the best at hand-to-hand, and I'd quickly become one of the top riflemen in the class. Brayden had greatly improved in hand-to-hand and was great with a bow. Layla had taken to swordplay like a moth to flame. Of course, Nia was nearly an expert at everything, in the top three of every category. But that wasn't surprising. What was surprising was that she'd opened up slowly and was helping her fellow classmates when they needed some pointers. She was basically a teacher's assistant, and it was nice to see her being more social. While still cold at times, she was much less so when I first arrived at the academy. She was like how I was with Layla and Brayden in Rory's class. As the day slowly came to an end, the major sat in his high officiating chair that overlooked the sparring ring. I watched as the fight before us ended. Once they cleared the ring, the major called for one last fight.
Flint, Griff, get your asses in the ring.
It wasn't a shock to me, since I'd proven my near unparalleled skill in the ring. The major delighted in ending the day with me fighting, usually against someone of similar skill or someone who presented a matchup problem for me, like Vari Galwin, a small girl from the West who is as ferocious as a tiger in the ring and just as fast. Today, though, it was Brayden's brawn. Fine by me. Brayden Flint was lighter on his feet than when I'd first come to the academy. He'd soaked up all the combat training like a sponge. So adding that to his bulk, he was a force to be reckoned with in the ring, but I'd still beat him. I knew how he fought, and though he was plenty skilled now and as strong as an ox, he didn't have that killer instinct, that pure drive to survive that he would need in combat. That absence, I would exploit that. I needed to hone that in him, though I wasn't sure how to foster it. He smiled as he bounced from foot to foot, eager and confident.
You ready for a beating? He called.
I chuckled.
In your dreams, Rumi.
Just then, the major rang the starting bell.
Begin,
he proclaimed. We circled each other. Brayden wouldn't attack first as he used to. He'd learned the hard way to be patient from me, but we couldn't circle each other forever. So we both slowly inched toward each other until we were within arm's reach of each other. Unfortunately for me, his arms were longer. That length was a double-edged sword. On the one hand, Brayden's reach was much longer than mine, so he could hit me and grab me without me being able to touch him. However, that also meant his swings were slower. In this instance, the disadvantage for him materialized. He swung at me in a slow arc. I was able to duck it and then jab at him in quick succession. I hit him twice in the ribs, and then skirted around him to work him on the side and back. He staggered a bit, and as I went to hit him again, he threw his body on me. His huge bulk crashed into me like a freight train. Pain flared along my left arm as I landed hard against the hard floor. I was on my stomach. My bones rattled, and as I grimaced, Brayden leapt on me. He put a knee in the small of my back and pinned my arms down. He leaned in close.
"Got you, Griff,"
he boasted in a loud whisper. That was his mistake, though. He shouldn't have gotten that close.
"You shouldn't brag,"
I said right before I slammed my head back hard, the crown of my head smacking against his forehead. The pain was jarring, but I gritted my teeth and pushed through it. Besides, I had given it far worse than I had gotten. Brayden yelped and flailed off me. Free, I pushed back, slid out from beneath his legs, came up in a low crouch, and then sprang up to plant a kick to his back that sent him sprawling. I couldn't let this opportunity pass, so I sprinted for him and hopped onto his back before he could recover. I locked my legs around his chest and put his head into a chokehold. He flailed his arms around briefly before he dove back and slammed me to the ground with all the force of his weight upon me. I was jarred loose as pain shot through my bones and every last breath in my body left me. The crowd erupted around the ring, oohing and whooping at this display. I wheezed while I tried to suck in air. Brayden rolled off me and staggered to his feet, though clearly, that move had rattled him too. Through the pain, I scampered to my feet, my arms sore and my legs wobbly. I wasn't done yet. I made for Brayden, but he saw me and swung at me. I dodged, slipping under it and catching him under the shoulder. Thrown off balance and completely unexpecting the attack, Brayden couldn't do much to resist and drove him backward into the ground with all the strength I could muster. It was enough. A stunned silence fell over the class as I got to my feet, ready to attack again. But Brayden didn't so much as twitch. Then everyone erupted in applause. I'd won. The major rang his bell.
"Winner! Griff, by knockout."
He smiled wide.
"Fantastic match, you two."
I nodded to him in thanks before I knelt down next to Brayden, who was slowly coming back to reality. He laid there in a stunned heap, disbelief written into his frown. I offered him my hand.
"That was one hell of a match, though."
He smiled then and took my hand.
"Yeah, it was,"
he replied with a grimace. I helped him to his feet, though it was a struggle for both of us. We then had to contend with a dozen classmates swarming us to praise us for the great fight, which was nice, even if I was tired and in pain. But Brayden, usually shy and meek, enjoyed the fanfare. I smiled. Good for him. As I pinched my nose closed to staunch the bleeding, and Layla berated Brayden for not knocking me out, Nia sauntered over to me with a smile. She looked me over and sized up my growing bruises and injuries.
"Cut it kind of close, didn't you?"
she teased. I shrugged, which made me wince, but I smiled through it.
"I had to give my audience a good show."
My voice was high and nasally because of my closed nose. She scoffed.
"You're such a reckless idiot."
Then she rubbed my shoulder tenderly, and that caused my heart to race.
"Great fight. And I'm glad to see that Flint is progressing so much."
"Yeah,"
I nodded.
"It's good to see."
Now I just needed him to get over his meekness and fear of monsters.
Easy.
It was nice to have Nia be more open with me. She'd hardly talked to me since the night she kissed me. I didn't want to push her, so I let her ease out of this awkwardness at her own pace. Still, I was happy to see we were making progress. Nia chuckled at me sympathetically.
"You two should head over to the infirmary."
I snorted.
"You don't say."
Nia rolled her eyes.
"You cheeky ass. I'll see you later."
After that, class was dismissed for dinner, while Brayden and I had to get fixed up first. As we climbed the steps of the infirmary, Brayden looked over at me, his eyes guilty.
"Does it hurt?"
he asked. "Haven't we talked about asking dumb questions like that?" I laughed. "We promised to do better, Flint." He smirked.
"We did, true."
Brayden opened the door and let me go through.
"Don't worry about it," I told him. "I've been in a lot of fights out in the wilds. Trust me, this is nothing."
He frowned like he wasn't convinced, but he didn't broach the subject further. As we entered the waiting room of the infirmary, we found it empty of people besides Meriden. I rang the little bell on the counter, then took a seat in one of the comfortable upholstered chairs that lined the perimeter of the room. My stomach rumbled quite audibly, which elicited a chuckle from Brayden.
"Hopefully that won't take too long," he said.
"Yeah, hopefully." A minute later, a nurse rushed in. She was about my age, maybe a few years older. She was flustered and out of breath, as if she'd run half a mile to get here. Her blonde hair was tied back in a messy bun, and several loose strands were matted to her forehead. She took a seat at the counter and gave us an apologetic smile.
"Oh, sorry for the wait. Response Squad 55 returned today, and almost all of them had critical injuries. Things have been a bit hectic."
"I'm sorry to hear that," I told her with my nasal tone. She nodded and wiped at her forehead.
"Me too."
She stood and gestured for us to follow her.
"Follow me to the general infirmary."
After a quick checkup, we were on our way. We'd done a number on each other, but it was nothing a few moments of healing couldn't take care of. No one paid us any mind as we entered the dining hall, which I knew would be the case, though it didn't keep me from feeling like I looked stupid. Ignoring the feeling, I went with Brayden to retrieve our food. Today, it wasn't too fancy. Some grilled trout and some stir-fried vegetables over rice. Still, very good. I didn't spot Layla, so she must have already finished and left.
"You really think she'll be okay?"
Brayden asked me as he carved up a slice of his fish.
"Layla isn't one to miss hanging out at meals."
"I think so, but these things take time," I reassured him, "especially with a family like hers." We filled him in on what happened with her family, how we'd beaten up or killed a bunch of gangsters, and how we'd returned to campus. He thankfully hadn't been upset that we'd gone without him, and he was very understanding since he claimed he had familial problems as well. That seemed to be the case with everyone I knew, aside from myself, who had no family besides Maelor. So, of course, I didn't really know how long this could take, or if she would be okay since I had no real experience dealing with familial strife. I could only hope. Layla was strong and stubborn, so I had to believe that she would be okay. If she needed help, I wouldn't hesitate to offer it. The rest of the meal was mostly uneventful. I was too starved and sore to really get into a conversation, and Brayden didn't pursue one either. So we just scarfed down our meals and then went back for seconds. By the time we were done, there were only about 24 left in the dining hall.
"Bathhouse?" I asked my roommate. There was no hesitation.
"Bathhouse," he echoed.
We left the dining hall and crossed the open yards of campus to the bathhouse. It was busier than usual, but that wasn't a bad thing. As we entered the foyer, I spotted three women from upper years standing by the hall that led to the female baths. They all wore bathrobes, some quite loosely, and were all smiles and giggles and all pretty to boot. One of them, a fair-skinned girl with long black curls, noticed me and whispered something to her friends as they glanced my way. They all giggled. The girl with the curls then winked at me, and three of them turned and disappeared down that hallway. I sighed. "I love this school," I mused. Brayden smirked.
"Yeah, I bet you do," he said with a knowing smile.
It was a shame that they didn't have co-ed baths, though I understood why they didn't. Oh, well. We entered the men's bath, and I inhaled the scent of soap and fragrant oils. It was more crowded than I was used to, but we'd come pretty late, so it was understandable. We walked along the sides, careful not to trip. Most of the baths were occupied with a fair amount of our fellow students, but we finally found one that only had four other occupants. That would do. As we stripped out of our clothes, I remembered the first real encounter I'd had with Gawain. He'd tried to be an ass to Brayden and me, and I hadn't taken to that at all, resulting in him trying to hit me. He'd missed, and I'd thrown him into the bath. That was the first volley in our war of insults and fists over the next several weeks, culminating in my victory over him in the Dance of Wills. Since then, he hadn't shown back up at school, and I wanted it to stay that way. Once our clothes and things were folded into the small lockers on the side of the room, I eased my sore body into the hot water. I sighed obnoxiously. The warmth was heaven on my rattled bones and bruised skin. It made the pain in my ribs feel distant and relaxed my strained muscles. I could have laid there all night. Brayden went off on his own to bathe, and I lounged in silence for a good while, content to let the soothing warm water envelop me and heal my battered body. I could hear the distant chirping of crickets and cicadas in the summer air, as well as the constant gossipy chatter of the other students in the baths. It was a good cadence to lose yourself in. A while later, we met by the lockers to get dressed after we were finished bathing. Once we were dressed, we quickly exited the bathhouse and made our way back to our dorm. A minute into our silent walk, Brayden sighed.
I needed that.
I nodded. Definitely. After more silence, I stretched my arms and massaged the back of my neck. I felt a lot better, but I hadn't washed away all my soreness. You know, I began, that was one of the better fights I've had in a long time, I told him. Brayden smirked. You might be able to give Nia a run for her money.
I don't know about that one, he said with a shake of his head. She scares me.
I laughed. Well, maybe not. Point is, though, you've come a long way, my friend.
Thanks, Griff, he said with a bashful grin.
And, I added, you've really stepped it up with Rory and Layla. He snorted.
Did you get me a prize, Professor Griff?
His tone was mocking, but I could tell he was joking. I just thought I'd compliment you. I'm proud of you. The progress we've all made is impressive.
Well, thank you.
He stayed silent and pondered that, as a thought occurred to me. You know, I never asked, but why are you afraid of monsters? It was an innocent question, though I was a little worried that maybe I'd brought up something he'd wanted to keep hidden. Still, it was a curiosity I'd had for a long time, and while I suspected it didn't come from a good place, he needed to overcome his fears for his own sake, if nothing else. Brayden, though, smirked.
You mean besides the obvious reasons, like the terrifying and unending, and they threaten our entire existence as a species?
Fair enough, I said with a laugh.
Yes, besides that.
He leaned his head back and rested it on the tile behind him.
With those things. Well, I've encountered monsters in the past.
Haven't we all? I quipped.
Unfortunately, he said, his voice growing more ominous.
I frowned. This wasn't going to be a happy story. What happened? I prompted. Brayden ran a hand through his hair.
The Flint family, if you didn't know, are the owners of the Flint Trading Company, one of the largest shipping and trading companies in all the enclaves. We move food, medicine, weaponry, general goods, everything. You name it, and we probably move it.
I whistled. That's impressive. I've heard of them, but I guess I never equated the name to you.
That's fine by me, he said with a shrug. I'm not one for all the fame and luxury my family name brings.
He paused and looked up at the stars.
The company was founded by my grandfather years ago. Before he died, he split it between my dad and uncle.
Let me guess. Family strife?
Actually, no, Brayden answered. My dad and uncle were twins. Best of friends. Perfect business partners. My father handled the business side of things, and my uncle was more of the promoter and hands-on with all the workers. He'd hired most of them, after all. Anyway, the plan was, of course, for the business to run through me and my cousin Bertram one day. But,
I asked. This was when the badness would come. I could hear the tragedy in his voice. He sighed.
10 years ago, I was accompanying my uncle and cousin and their family as they rode with one of the shipments. I'd been visiting my uncle's side of the family in Garvish, while my father held an important meeting here in Valais. We were on the way here to celebrate my father and uncle's birthday. However,
he paused to lick his lips and take a deep breath.
We were beset by monsters from a random rift along the road.
My heart dropped.
Shit,
I whispered.
Yeah,
he sighed and closed his eyes.
They killed everyone except for a few caravan guards and me, before a response squad that just happened to be in the area helped us. I watched monsters butcher my family. After that, well, let's just say nightmares became a frequent part of my nightly routine.
Damn. I'm sorry, Brayden. I only hoped my voice conveyed all the sympathy I had in my heart for him. That's certainly a sensible reason to fear monsters. He nodded.
Yeah, I still have those nightmares from time to time.
He flushed slightly.
That's why I rustle around and moan in my sleep sometimes.
That just makes it even more incredible that you've managed to come this far, I told him with an encouraging smile. I leaned over and clapped a hand on his meaty shoulder. Most people aren't nearly strong enough to ever overcome their fears, much less face them head on, especially something as visceral as monsters.
Thank you, Griff. I appreciate it.
He hung his chin into his chest.
So now you know why I'm so... skittish, I guess.
Again, my friend, you've come a long way. I enthused. You've certainly curbed your stuttering, and you've been much more assertive lately. He considered that.
True. It helps the people who've stopped treating us summoners like we're useless. Mostly.
I cracked my knuckles, which was more painful than it should have been. But I had just been in a fight. And we won't stop, my friend. Not until summoners everywhere have the respect they deserve. We had to earn it. Brayden had to earn it. Layla, too.
That's your mission, Griff, he said, and then smiled. But I'll support you all the way.
I grinned. If we had drinks, they would have been raised.
Chapter 13. The next day, Brayden and I made our way to Arwen's class. We both wondered if the beautiful red-haired professor would teach us anything new right before the exams at the end of the week. It wouldn't be so bad if she did, since I wasn't at all worried about failing the exams. A few minutes after everyone was seated and situated, Arwen strode into the room from her quarters right next door. She placed her books and papers on her desk and shed her white adept robes, then hung them on the back of her chair. She wore a sky-blue blouse that was tight at her chest and waist that showed off the feminine curves that made her so perfect. The top of the blouse was unbuttoned and revealed the milky flesh beneath. Her cleavage looked great as her huge breasts strained against the material. I would have been more excited if I hadn't already seen her in all her bare-naked glory. Already. Still, it was a welcome sight.
Today, I have a special lesson planned for you, she began. We'll be talking about the monster hunting industry, and how there are others who participate in it, outside of the military.
She flourished her hands and gestured dramatically at the open door. Footsteps echoed off the stone floor, as a man stepped through the doorway. He was middle-aged, with a shaved head, and a long red beard that was slowly turning gray in spots. He had a severe face, two pale eyes with shadows under them, sallow cheeks, and a rough set of lips that had scars all over them. He did not seem like a happy sort of person.
This is Lieutenant Jovic, Arwen said by way of introduction. Second in command of the Blackwind, a mercenary company out of Koresh Enclave.
He stepped to the front of the class with his muscular arms folded behind his back. His eyes scanned the class, his broken lips curved to a smile. His chest was broad and puffed out against the starched gray shirt he wore. Over that, Jovic wore studded leather armor that looked impeccably made, strapped with knives and vials of potions, which gave me the impression that he was a very intimidating and well-prepared man.
Thank you, Miss Amna, the lieutenant replied, his voice gravelly and harsh. With a unified military almost exclusively focused on the worldwide monster threat, our duties are left to private military contractors to deal with. You might have heard of us. We're called freelancers.
I've heard that before. They went around doing the work that the military and local police forces couldn't, whether it was because the military was spread too thin or the police were undermanned. I'd seen them on occasion while traveling with my mentor Maelor. Sometimes they were morally upstanding, but others, they were far more questionable. Lieutenant Jovic echoed most of what I'd just thought, as he said.
The services provided by companies like mine are numerous, but usually revolve around security work, private investigations, and bounty hunting.
He put his hands on his hips.
However, arguably, our most important service is that we help close out of the way rifts that the military doesn't have the manpower to deal with.
A few hands went up on that. The lieutenant called on Miri, a short girl on the left side of the room with shoulder-length black hair.
How can you go about doing that? She questioned. Wouldn't you need banishers?
We have banishers, of course, Jovic answered. How else would we close the rifts, after all?
How do you get them?
The student in front of me, Foley, Dedarian, asked. Lieutenant Jovic chuckled, which made him seem warmer than I'd originally perceived him to be.
They seek us out and join us. It's quite simple. Most are unregistered, though
old banishers retired from official military service are hired on occasion.
Nia raised her hand. Jovic lifted an eyebrow and pointed at her.
Yes, ma'am.
Since banishers are the rarest and arguably the most important type of mage, why would the military allow unregistered banisher adepts to roam free and join these freelance companies?
He considered the question and stroked his beard.
While it is true that banishers are in high demand, the military leaves them alone if they're on a freelance response squad. If a banisher is in the military, then they would be on a response squad regardless. So as long as they're doing that, the military isn't too concerned.
His face darkened before he added,
It's for this reason that banishers have the least freedom when it comes to their lives, among any of the magic types.
That grim statement stayed with us.
Most people knew that the military could indiscriminately draft mages into their academies, and then force them to serve. I was a textbook example of that. I hadn't any choice in the matter. While I didn't know how people in the enclaves felt about it, us Wilders weren't particularly fond of being forced into service. I didn't mind it now, for I truly wanted to help the world and save people from monsters. But people deserved a choice in the matter. After all, mages could die fighting against monsters, just as easily as regular soldiers.
Layla sat a few rows over from me, and she frowned hard, her brow furrowed as she stared at her desk. I knew for a fact that she hadn't liked being drafted. She'd just been a girl living in the slums of Varlay, trying to eke out a living, while she avoided a troubled home life. But a freak encounter revealed her magic, and now she was here. It had turned out all right for her in the end, but she'd been hellbent on getting kicked out of the academy when I'd first arrived. She didn't want to lay down her life for the military, and as much as that had changed, I still understood how she felt.
Basically, he said as he brought his gloved hands together, there are far too many rifts and too few resources within the combined military to deal with it, so us freelancers are in high demand.
Arwen moved next to him. I hadn't noticed before, but he towered over her, and she wasn't a short woman. She smiled as she said,
We thought it best to inform you, students, of what other options you can pursue, once your obligatory 5 years of military service are complete. Assuming, of course, that you wish to leave.
I hadn't put that much thought into what life would be like after my term was over. As it was now, I had nearly 3.5 more years at the academy, then those 5 years of military service. Assuming I survived that 8-year stretch, I didn't know what I wanted to do. It hadn't been something I'd thought about even when I was still working with Maelor, which was probably the reason they had brought in the guest speaker.
Also, Arwen continued, there's always a possibility that you'll have to work with freelancers out in the field. It's good for you to recognize these groups and foster working relationships with them. After all, we're all on the same side against the monster onslaught.
A student in the front named Trilgero raised his hand. He was a wind mage from the slums of Varlay, like Layla, though he'd eagerly volunteered for the academy. The sides of his head were shaved, with a slick back crop of sandy hair on top. He was a nice enough sort, and he hadn't been an ass to me like many others had been when I'd first arrived. Jovic crossed his arms.
Yes?
How do you get paid?
A lot of us nodded, curious. I was all for helping people in my future, but as mages, we needed to make a living. I knew that once we were in full military service after school, food and board would be taken care of, and we would receive a stipend. I didn't know how much that was, though.
The lieutenant laughed.
I always get asked that, but it's a fair question. We get paid by commission, so it can vary. Bounties will vary on the crime and the history of the perpetrator. Same goes for when we do investigations and security work. The higher the workload and risk, the more we get paid. As for closing rifts, we get paid the same flat rate by the military for each one. We turn in the remains of the catalyst stones we destroy as proof of the deed.
I raised my hand, and he called on me.
What does that pay?
I asked.
He smirked. I'm not at liberty to give you a specific figure, but I can tell you that freelancers get paid quite handsomely for our services.
I nodded, satisfied. I figured that they were probably paid well. After all, I expected to be paid accordingly if I went around saving people. Maybe not enough to be rich, but enough to make a good living. Even Maylor and I had been paid well, but we'd also been in a profession with high demand. Freelancers seemed to be in the same situation. Jovic fielded more questions after that for the rest of the class, but there wasn't any information that I didn't already know from my life with Maylor. Soon enough, the class was over, and we were ushered to our next one. But what the lieutenant talked about stuck with me for the rest of the day. At lunch, I sat with Layla and Brayden as usual. Today, we had pork roast and steamed vegetables, along with boiled crab that was imported from the Far Eastern seas. I'd never had crab before, and it was amazing. Though it was difficult to open the shell to get at the meat. It was worth it when I did, though. As we ate, my eyes wandered and found Nia. She ate alone, as was her prerogative. It wasn't as if people didn't like her, but she didn't like people, and it didn't help that most were intimidated by her. I didn't blame them. She was as intense a person as I'd ever met, but she had a soft side that she didn't show to anyone other than me. Our eyes met for only a second, but as soon as they did, her cheeks reddened, and she averted her gaze. My shoulders sagged. That shyness was new. I'd hoped her kiss wouldn't make things weird going forward. Looked like I had to move ahead carefully. I was thankful that neither of my friends had noticed, Layla especially. She wouldn't let me hear the end of it, if she knew me and Nia had that kind of relationship. I didn't need her teasing me or all the questions she would pepper me with. I loved Layla, but she could overwhelm a person with her curiosity. Brayden finally broke the silence of our meal.
"What did you think of Lieutenant Jovic?"
he asked as he effortlessly cracked a crab claw in half and sucked the meat out of it. I shrugged. He definitely had some interesting things to say. Layla stretched her arms and yawned.
"Did you ever see freelancers when you moved around the wilds?"
"Sometimes," I recounted. Lots of the ones I saw were rather scummy, but I wasn't even sure what it was they did other than being mercenaries. Brayden nodded.
"It's an interesting career choice.
A necessary one, too," I said in agreement.
"I'd do it, maybe,"
Layla said, and though she had come to terms with risking her life in battle, it was still a bit of a surprise to hear her say that.
"The money's good, and I'd get to travel. I want to get as far away from this enclave and my family as I can."
"Your home life is that bad, huh?"
Brayden asked with an eyebrow raised. She snorted and took a bite of the broccoli on her plate.
"You don't know the half of it."
"I thought you didn't want to risk your life helping people,"
Brayden asked as he cracked open a crab leg, fished out the meat, and dunked it in a vat of butter.
"I'm better with that now,"
she said as she gave me a sidelong glance.
"Other people have helped me out a lot."
"Oh?"
our big friend asked, as he smirked at the two of us.
"You both going to start breaking up city gangs now, along with saving us from monsters?"
Layla glared at him as he shoved the hunk of crab into his mouth and chewed contentedly.
"I didn't like being forced to join the academy and made to risk my life. I don't appreciate my life being dictated for me," she sighed. "But I'll do what I can to help. And if I can also make a bunch of money, that's fine. I would choose that life."
I raised my glass of orange juice.
"I'll drink to that."
"Cheers."
"Cheers,"
my two friends said, and we touched our juice glasses together.
"What about you?"
she asked me as she leaned forward on her elbows and gave me a mischievous grin. I thought about it for a moment, then shrugged and took a bite of my pork. "I'd probably do the same as you. Travel, help people, get paid handsomely for it. If I stayed with the military, I'd have to stay in an enclave or near one most of the time. And I'd rather be free. Of course, it was hard to know where life would take me in the future. Where would my relationships with Layla, Nia, and Arwen go? Or friendships with Brayden and others take me? Maybe I'd fall in love with being on a military response squad. Perhaps I would teach, since more summoners needed to learn how to unlock their true potential. And who was better to teach them than me? There was always the possibility that I would settle down somewhere and pick up a trade, or maybe return to Maylor and continue our general labor work. I'd enjoyed it immensely, so I couldn't rule it out. The options were endless, though, so it was hard for me to nail down what I wanted to do in the future.
Freedom is always the best way to go,
Layla added with a smile. That much was certainly true in her case. I folded my hands as I looked at Brayden. Any plans for your future? He shrugged his massive shoulders.
I don't know. I might not have a choice, honestly. I suspect my family will have a say in the matter.
I frowned. What kind of say?
My father is a powerful man, Griff, he said with a sigh. Trust me. He can get his way if he so chooses. And he usually does.
Layla and I shared a concerned look. Brayden never talked about his family, and frankly, I wasn't one to pry. Layla was, but there was a mutual understanding between the two of them that family talk was off-limits, unless they offered the information. Layla had offered hers up to me, when we'd pranked Gawain a few weeks back, and she'd taken me to meet her parents when her brother got out of jail, but Brayden had yet to volunteer his backstory. His family life clearly bothered him, but I knew he wouldn't budge. Again, another item on my list of problems to solve. Of course, that wasn't even the most pressing one for Brayden. The biggest problem was his fear of monsters, which, as one might imagine, is a problem for a mage who summons them. It felt like all of us had family issues. Nia had a demanding father and all the pressure in the world. Layla's family was a train wreck of magnificent proportions. I simply didn't have a family outside of Maelor, and Brayden had some sort of familial strife of his own. We were a mess, that was for sure. Brayden sipped his cider.
It's all a moot point for now, anyway.
My brow furrowed. Why is that?
None of this will matter if we don't survive through our service to make it to our future.
Cheery thought, Flint,
Layla said as she shook her head. Unfortunately, Brayden wasn't wrong. We lived in a dangerous world, with the threat of monster attacks always present. We were mages, and would be at the front lines of the fight against the forces of the Shadowscape, so the odds were good that we could die. Everyone in the school knew that, though it was the best-kept secret there was. So, Brayden was right. We had promising futures ahead of us, if we survived to get there. But I had no doubt that we would. We were strong, and there was nothing that could stop us. I'd make sure of that. I'd also make sure they were strong enough to overcome anything.
Chapter 14.
The final day before the summer holiday was here. We took our exams and I aced them, or at the very least I felt like I did. For Arwen's class, it was a comprehensive assessment of all we'd learned that semester. I'd started behind the rest of the class, but with the intense studying I did, the amounts of extracurricular books I'd read, and Arwen's extensive tutoring, I felt like I was fine. It certainly helped that I could focus all my efforts on that exam. Our training classes with archery and firearms teacher Gerelda and the major were simply training. They did grade us on our effort and attendance, but there was no final exam to pass in the traditional sense. As for Rory's class, he'd thrown out the usual test completely, because we had completely overhauled the class to teach my style of summoning. Along with that, Brayden and Layla had made such progress that Mr. Brevins decided to pass us for the semester. We'd more than proven ourselves. Dinner that night was full of an excited buzz for the pending holiday break. Alcohol flowed more freely than usual, and the feast of baked chicken, pot pies, and cooked corn was bountiful and delicious. I was as excited as I'd been in a while, aside from when I beat Gawain. Tomorrow, I planned on journeying to Tollington to visit Maelor. My adrenaline was pumping for the coming days. It would be hard to get any sleep. That I was sure of. Layla and Brayden were not as enthusiastic. They played with their food and didn't speak much. I stared at them as they looked sullen. It was a real bummer, so I cleared my throat, which got both of their attention. You two look a little glum, I said with a raised brow. Brayden snorted and shoveled a spoonful of the pot pie into his mouth.
It's just going to be a long and boring break without you.
Layla pushed her head away and laid her head down on the table.
Yeah, you can't expect me to hang around this earth for 2 weeks, huh?
Brayden grumbled at that, but kept eating. I thought they'd gotten along fine before I'd arrived,
but I suppose I never actually got to witness the two of them alone.
Neither of you are going home? I asked.
You know I'm not.
Leyland snorted and picked at her corn.
I know. Sorry, that was dumb of me to say, I replied, since I doubted she would speak to her family for a long, long time.
It's okay,
she said as she smiled at me.
You already helped me a bunch with them.
My eyes flitted to Braden, who shrugged.
Father's been pressuring me in his letters to quit the academy, so I don't want to deal with him, frankly.
I took a long swig of my ale. Why would he want that? Braden chewed for a moment.
I'm the heir to the company, so he wants me to come home and start learning the ropes. Obviously, he's also terrified that I'll get killed in combat, and the company will be left without an heir for years to come.
He said that so bluntly that it made me think his dad only cared if he lived to better the company.
You make it sound so cold and calculated, I pointed out.
Braden feigned nonchalance with a shrug, but I could see the way his neck and jaw tensed as he tried to suppress a frown.
I may have been too harsh. Don't get me wrong, he loves me, but he cares deeply about the business my grandfather created. He feels it's all he has left of his brother, too.
I chewed on that. Well, if you put it that way, then I guess I understand.
Still,
Layla began as she sat back and groaned.
This is going to be a long holiday. I can't keep pranking only Flint the whole time.
We all chuckled. As we settled down into silence, a brilliant idea occurred to me.
Wait, why don't you two come on the road with me?
They both perked up at the suggestion. Layla didn't even hesitate.
Yeah, that sounds better than staying here.
Braden looked less than sure.
I don't know.
I smiled. Come on, Braden.
You gotta see the wilds, the beautiful landscapes, meet the incredible people of the wilds. You can meet Maelor.
Oh, I'm sure we'll love you too, Layla snickered.
That didn't sound sincere.
Well, he'd like Braden.
He might get sick of you, I told her with a wide grin. She laughed.
I would be honored to annoy the hell out of your mentor and father figure.
We both turned our gaze on Braden.
How about it, Flint? I asked.
It'll be one hell of a time. Some fun bonding.
It's that, or stay here alone. He pondered it only for a moment before he cracked a grin and nodded.
All right, I'm in too.
Layla cheered and practically bounced in her seat.
This is so exciting!
We were all smiles as we clanked our drinks together and drank our fill. I was glad to have them come with me. The journey would be long, and I appreciated having company. Plus, I figured the adventure would do them some good. Once I gulped down my drink and belched obnoxiously, I smiled at them.
I hope you two can ride horses, because we won't be able to take a train the whole way there.
They both nodded.
Horses don't like me, but I know how to ride, Braden clarified.
Well, they sense the monsters in our essence crystals, and that spooks them,
Layla pointed out. I chuckled and clapped.
Very good, Miss Bethel.
She rolled her eyes.
I pay attention in class. Thank you very much.
If this was what our nights at inns on the road were going to be like, then I was looking forward to this trip even more. That was saying something, because I had been ecstatic enough already. After dinner was over and after Braden and I had bathed and packed, I left the dorm once more to try to find Nia, though I had a pretty good idea of where I could find her. I wouldn't see Nia for another fortnight, so I was eager to spend some time with her before we departed for the holiday. I strolled down the breezeway on the side of the main building, my hands in the pockets of my robes. It was an unseasonably cool night, pleasant against my skin. It had been very humid lately, so I appreciated this pleasant reprieve from the mugginess. As I neared the courtyard where Nia and I trained, I could hear her before she came into view. She grunted and breathed heavily, so I knew she was in the middle of drilling herself. She really never knew when to take some time off. On the other hand, that relentless drive was also what made her so skilled and amazing, and one of the reasons why I and so many others admired her. I rounded the corner and stood in the archway to the small courtyard. Nia stood at its center, her back to me, as she jabbed and kicked at a training dummy. Her pale skin glistened with sweat, and her ashen hair fell down her back in a stringy tail that was also streaked with perspiration. Nia showed off more skin than I was used to. She wore a sleeveless top that seemed too small for her,
and rode up her back and stomach, revealing the toned muscles beneath. Her feet were bare, and she wore shorts that cut off almost halfway up her thigh. I'd never seen the skin of her legs before, and I marveled at the smooth curves of them. Seeing her now just solidified the fact that she was perfect to me. Still, it was odd that she was so exposed. Maybe she wouldn't mind me seeing her as she was, but I knew she didn't want to be seen so bare in front of others. Anyone could have walked by at any moment and seen her. I cleared my throat and then chuckled when she spun around with outrage on her face. You really need to learn to pay attention to your surroundings. I walked toward her with a smile. Anyone could sneak up on you. Nia let out a deep breath, but surprisingly, she didn't give me a chastising or sarcastic response to that statement. Instead, she wiped the sweat from her face and smoothed down her messy hair. She sucked in some more air, looked at her toes, then back to me. She seemed so exhausted, but not in a physical way.
Hey there,
she said simply with only the slightest twitch of her lips. I crossed my arms and frowned at her. Everything all right with you? It was her turn to frown.
I'm fine, Griff. Thanks.
That was a lie, but I let it slide. Nia liked to vent. Nia needed to vent, so that's what I'd let her do. I knew my presence alone was enough to relax her a bit. She didn't offer any more words before she started back at wailing on the poor training dummy. I laid in the grass, arms behind my head, and stared up at the stars and the waning moon. I took in some deep breaths and let the majesty of it all wash over me. The sky was dimmer in the city, the glow of the city lights fading the brilliance of the night sky. It was still gorgeous, but seeing the sky out in the wilds, there was no comparison. We stayed like that for a while, together in presence, but our minds and actions apart. Her grunts, breaths, and occasional curses, as well as the sound of her blows on the burlap and straw dummy, set a steady rhythm over my mind as I stared and thought. It was peaceful. Sometimes I didn't need anything more than this from Nia. I liked her a great deal, but for now, I didn't need another kiss or her love or anything. I was content to just lay here and enjoy the moments we could spend together. Eventually, I pushed myself up onto my elbows and watched Nia work. Her grunts had grown angrier, her breathing heavier, and her strikes weaker. Nevertheless, she beat the dummy so hard that its seams tore, and straw began to spill out in clumps. It would be worthless before long, and that only seemed to make Nia madder. Nia, I called. She ignored me and punched at the dummy's head. Once, twice, thrice, each time more vicious than the last. Nia, I tried again. That annoyed her, clearly, but she kept on punching. This time, after a few punches, the last of the stuffing fell out of the dummy's head, but Nia was either too blind with stubborn anger to notice or to care. She swung, and I knew this would hurt. Nia! I barked. It was too late, though. She punched the now sagging hollow dummy's head. Her fist went through the fabric and punched into the wooden post beneath that the dummy was fastened to. She hit it without a hint of resistance, with a loud crack. She sucked in a breath and immediately recoiled, shaking her hand and holding it gingerly at her side.
Son of a bitch!
She yelped through gritted teeth. Nia dropped to her knees and clutched her hand to her, wincing and cursing all the while. I took a knee beside her. That looked like it hurt. She gave me a pained chuckle.
You are lucky this hurts so bad, or I would punch you in the jaw.
That would just leave you in the same predicament, Nia. It's a well-known fact that my head is as hard as a rock. Nia grunted with an exaggerated roll of her eyes. I tried to reach for her hand to give it a look, but she snatched it away from me and stubbornly shook her head. Let me see it, I demanded. She shook her head even harder and pouted like a little girl.
No!
I didn't know if I should be angry or laugh, so I tried to stay neutral. Nia, you're acting like a child. Just let me see the damage. You might need to go to the infirmary.
Fine,
she groaned. Begrudgingly, she released her hand from her side and let me take it. She sucked in the air through her teeth as I took it a little too roughly. Sorry, I said sheepishly. I gently inspected Nia's hand. Her knuckles were bright red, and her fingers trembled, but they seemed mostly spared, except for her middle finger, which was already swelling, as were the knuckles of her ring and pinky fingers. Maybe not broken, but she definitely needed to see a nurse. I knew I should have been more tactful, but I was too frustrated with how stubborn she could sometimes be.
Why did you do that?
Nia averted her gaze, her eyes more embarrassed than angry.
I needed to blow off some steam.
Blowing off steam and hurting yourself are two different things, Nia. I shook my head and sighed. You push yourself too hard. I remembered back to when I'd first discovered her in this courtyard. Hours after we'd fought for the second time in the sparring arena and I'd won. The first person to best the great Nia Kenefic. I found her here, practicing as she was now, injured and tired. She didn't take that loss lightly at the time. She could go overboard in her quest for perfection, with good reason, I knew. If she didn't finish in the top three of her class each year, her father would marry her off to Gawain, and that was a fate I wished on no one. But still, she was so far ahead of everyone in our class, aside from me, that she didn't need to go this hard all the time. Nia hung her head and sighed.
I know, Griff.
She took her hand away and nursed it against her side again. She plopped down into the grass. I sat next to her. Not excited about this break, I take it?
Not in the slightest,
she snorted. Why not? She hugged her legs to her chest.
Family issues. I would rather not be around. I do not like being the center of their attention.
I laughed. You could have fooled me. She bumped her shoulder against mine.
I don't mind the class's attention, but my whole family, it's a bit much.
I can imagine. I cracked my knuckles and grinned at her. That elicited a mocking scoff.
No, you cannot.
I frowned. Do you have to go home for the holiday? Couldn't you just stay here? She shook her head, dejected.
The academy does allow students to stay over break, but my father wouldn't allow me to, even if I asked. So I will be up bright and early tomorrow on an airship bound for our second home in Hartmire.
I gave her a sideways glance, my eyebrows raised inquisitively. Did you just say your second home? Nia shrugged like it was no big deal.
We are the most famous and powerful family in the world, Griff. We have a home in nearly every enclave. Not all of them are that extravagant, mind you.
I laughed and placed a palm against my head. This girl. Her words would have sounded like a boast to most people, but what she said was simply a fact. The Kenefics were, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the most influential family in the world. Everyone knew the Kenefic name, whether they be in an enclave or the wilds. Everyone knew of the legendary exploits of her magical monster-fighting family. I guess I shouldn't have been shocked to learn that she had several houses. I bet most of them were mansions, too, but I didn't ask her that. It's strange, I began, as I leaned back on my hands and looked to the sky.
What's strange?
She asked in a whisper. All of my friends, you, Layla, Brayden, you all have some major familial problems to deal with in your lives, despite such different backgrounds. Yet here I am, wishing I had some of that. What I wouldn't give to argue with my mother or father. I trailed off briefly before clearing my throat. I'm not saying to not take your family for granted or anything like that, and I'm not trying to make light of your situation. I'm just... I don't know. I'm just thinking aloud. Nia pondered that for a while, the silence thick over us in the meantime. Finally, she sighed.
Do not make my annoyance and anger at my father or my reluctance to see my family as apathy. I love them with all my heart. It's just... they are a bit much sometimes.
I laid down completely and shut my eyes. I wasn't questioning that. I missed my family is all. I let out a deep sigh. Can't wait to see Maelor in a few days. My ears perked up to the sound of Nia adjusting to face me. I cracked open my eyes and found her staring at me, a weathered smile warming her features.
Maelor is the summoner that rescued you, huh?
She asked. I realized I'd never really told her much about my life. We'd always talked about her. Or our studies. I'd given her some information, but not a lot. So I nodded when she asked that question. Yeah, and he raised me like a son. Taught me everything I know. Made me into the man I am now. I smiled suddenly and winked at her.
except for my charm and good looks. That's all superior breeding.
She snorted into a laugh, which warmed my heart.
Oh, yes. Top notch.
She smiled widely. Then, after a moment, she reached out with her good hand and placed it on my shoulder and gave it a comforting squeeze.
I'm sure he's proud of who you've become, and your parents would be too.
I sat up, and she dropped her hand. I turned my gaze to the grass and offered her a shy grin. Thanks, Nia.
Don't mention it. Farm boy.
She cracked a grin, but then winced when she shifted slightly, the pain in her hand flaring up.
So yeah, you should go to the infirmary, I said.
She nodded and grimaced.
You are probably correct.
I pushed myself to my feet and then helped her up. I pulled a little too hard, and she stumbled into me, her legs sore and tired from her training. I held her arms to keep her steady. She chuckled as silence crept over us.
Thanks,
she said. I nodded. We stared at each other for a breath, but it felt a lot longer. Even as sweaty and dirty as she was still the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen. My gaze flitted between her eyes and her lips, which made me remember her kissing me abruptly on that night that was so much like tonight. Even as sweaty and dirty as she was still the most beautiful sight I'd ever seen. My gaze flitted between her eyes and her lips, which made me remember her kissing me abruptly on that night that was so much like tonight. She seemed to have the same thought. Her eyes dropped to her feet.
And by the way, I'm sorry about avoiding you the last few weeks after, you know.
I snickered. It's okay, Nia. Nia shook her head.
No, it isn't. I kissed you and panicked and it's my fault. It was the heat at the moment. I shouldn't have pushed you away because of it. So I
silenced her by brushing my lips gently against hers, with a whisper of a kiss. In the past, that would have gotten me a scolding and probably a beating, but now it thoroughly silenced her and made her already reddened cheeks an even more spectacular shade of crimson. Now we're even, I smirked. She stood frozen.
Okay.
I frowned. Did I make it weird? She blushed even harder, then shook her head profusely.
No, not at all. You just caught me off guard, is all.
Her lips curled into the slightest of smirks as she leaned into me and kissed me back. It was quick, but it sent a shiver through my bones. I can't say that I didn't enjoy that, I smiled. She rolled her eyes as if she knew how that kiss would make me feel.
I'm glad you're satisfied, since we won't be able to see each other for a while.
I nodded. Truthfully, I wanted more. Craved more. I wanted to pull her close to me, and for us to melt together into one being. But I reckoned that it wouldn't be that simple with a Kinefic. I was patient, however, and Maelor had taught me that all good things come with time. And Nia Kinefic was certainly a good thing. So I would wait. A stiff breeze rushed through the courtyard and made the unusually bare Nia shiver. You should put on your cloak, and then also go to the infirmary. Nia rolled her eyes.
I will.
I stretched my arms and yawned. You want me to walk you there? She didn't need my help, I knew, but I wanted to spend more time with her. I knew what her answer would be, though. She was too stubborn to say otherwise.
I think I can handle it, thanks.
Yep, I just knew she would say that. I waited for her to pull on her boots and her uniform cloak. It was sad to see her skin get covered up, but what could I do? I'd have the memory at least. As she made to leave at last, she paused, turned back to me, and wrapped her arms around my waist in a gentle hug. Her hurt hand hung loosely over the small of my back.
Thank you for making me feel better, Griff,
she said in a whisper. I rubbed her back tenderly. Anytime you need it, I shall provide. She snickered and then pulled away.
Have a good holiday, you charming yokel.
You too, Lady Kinefic. With a smile, she planted one last quick kiss on the corner of my lips like a promise. Then she turned on her heel and strode away, disappearing down the breezeway.
I wouldn't see her again for another fortnight. But now I had something to look forward to after the holiday. So, though it was only a kiss for now, there was a promise of something more in the future. And for now,